In this episode, John Michelson talks about a group you'll definitely want to join, and Jess Dean offers another thrilling recommendation.
Welcome to Gay Mystery Authors with Brad Shreve, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. Plus, Justine Adamek is here with her weekly recommendation.
Come on, Brad, we should get going. It's got to be just quick and easy to start.
Okay, yes, you are. I'm putting this off too long, so let's just get right down to business. You said today that you're going to be talking about Meg Perry.
I really like her Jamie Brodie mysteries. This is a 19-book series, which, you know, compared to Frank Butterfield's 36-book series is not so long. But you can drop in at any point, but you might want to start at the beginning. They are now on sale. The early ones are now on sale for $2.99, unlike when I bought all of them at $6 or $7.99. The most recent one, which I'm going to talk about today, is called Deserted to Death, a Jamie Brodie mystery, and it's book 19. Jamie and his husband, Pete, it's not a romance. They get together some point in the early books, but their relationship is a layered onto the story, and it's not a meet, fall in love, conflict kind of thing. And the books end with them getting on about daily life. In this one, they have bought a second home in the desert, which they're trying to make self-sustainable. And they're out building a greenhouse and the like. Jamie is a librarian at UCLA, and he's inherited some money, but he's trying not to spend it. As you know, people who win the lottery, they run out there and they spend everything, and all of a sudden they're out of money a year later. I don't know if I'd do that. Do you think you'd do that?
Based on what I've learned from people that have done it, I think I would hire people to control my money right away.
Yeah, and that's what he did. So he's still working as a librarian. He uses his research skills to solve many of these cases. But this one, they're out there and they're setting up their new second home where they plan to retire. They're building greenhouses. They're taking 1-minute showers and using the buckets of shower water to water the cactuses outside. And they're trying to settle into this newly built solar-powered house. And one morning he goes out to run with the dog and finds a dead body in the middle of the street. Naked, broken bones, and bloodied feet.
Oh, that's not good.
Not good at all. Maybe or maybe not connected with that, they're getting harassed because they're gay. Starts with a note in their mailbox, which is misspelled, you know, queers go home, and queer is misspelled Q-U-E-R. And then people plant crosses on their lawn, and it starts to escalate from there. So in this book, the relationship was a little more pronounced because they're trying to settle into their new home and people are coming to visit them. But the mystery is so good that it grips you. It brings you into the book. And at the end, there's a thrilling solution to the mystery. And I can't tell you more than that. Although Jamie is the one that solves it. And as a result of that thrilling solution, which may involve some violence, this one gets my thrilling recommendation.
A thrilling recommendation. This is our second one, I think.
Our second thrilling recommendation. And if you want to start with one of the earlier books, but you don't want to, you want to drop in the middle, or you want to start a few books before this one, Haunted to Death, which is book 17, where they go off to a Scottish castle, which is haunted. That's a trope I really like, you know, traveling to another country, the Scottish countryside and staying in a castle and stumbling upon a murder. One of my favorite tropes, and Haunted to Death really does it well.
Okay, now to put things in perspective, you said that she currently has a sale going that all her books are $2.99?
All her books are $2.99 or $3.99.
Do you know when that goes till?
I have no idea. They may actually be permanently discounted to that, but I was surprised when I went to look at them that they were cheaper than when I had started buying them.
Okay, just for those that may listen down the road, this is Thanksgiving week in the United States in 2019. So as of right now, their books are running $2.99 and $3.99, and you can check, and maybe they're still running that way.
Yeah, considering it's 19 books, that's a significantly lower cost. So I really urge you to get them now, or at least get the first one, or maybe start with the most recent one. You'll enjoy them. You'll enjoy them, Brad. I think the puzzles, there are a lot of them are puzzle mysteries. The guy who drops out of the sky into the nuclear lab.
So now you're giving me another one to read.
No, I'm giving you another 19 to read, Brad.
I know Meg from the Gay Mystery Thriller Suspense Group on Facebook. So I've been wanting to read her book. So this may be a good way to start.
By the way, Haunted to Death is on sale for 99 cents.
Oh, okay. That might be the place to start. Well, any news from Recurred Tales?
Recurred Tales this week is putting out a literary book. It's not a mystery, but it's very enjoyable. It makes for great Thanksgiving reading. There are some holidays. A young boy comes of age in the 1960s during the Vietnam War, and he has a wide group of eccentric relatives where he goes to stay at the summer, spends holidays there, and there's religious iconography, people with war memorabilia from the Second World War. He's got a couple of cousins that give him a hard time, and along the way, he discovers he's gay. Some people have a moment where they realize, where they suddenly know that's what it is. They see somebody across the room and go, oh, I'm gay, and then try to spend time figuring out what to do with that. He slowly becomes aware of it.
So just before we wrap up, let's give the name of Meg Perry's book that you're reviewing.
Deserted to Death, a Jamie Brody mystery, book 19. And then the Recurred Tales book is The Genius of Desire by Brian Boldrey.
Okay, well, I am off. I am interviewing John Michelson today.
Yeah.
And great talk that we've had about Gay Mystery Thriller Suspense Group on Facebook that he created, as well as his book series. So it's a good interview.
Talk to you later, Brad.
Okay, see you next week.
Interact with other crime fiction fans and authors in our Gay Mystery Thriller Suspense Fiction Group on Facebook. Links are on our website, GayMysteryAuthors.com.
My guest in this episode is John Michelson. John, it's good to have you here today.
It's great to be here with you.
Now, for those who are not familiar with John, John writes the popular Kendall Parker mystery series, of which the first novel, Pretty Boy Dead, was selected as a Lambda Literary Award finalist for Gay Mystery. The second novel in the series, The Deadwood Mysteries, will be released in December 2019, next month. Now, I met John through the Gay Mystery Thriller Suspense Facebook group, which, John, you created 6 years ago, correct?
Absolutely. Began that September in 2013.
Well, the group, great. I found through the group a rich diversity, pervasive number of books, more than I thought were out there. And it was also the inspiration for this podcast. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. I'm very pleased with the success of the group. When I started, it was just a few other folks that all had the same interest, particularly in the gay mystery suspense genre. It has grown significantly since then, to where we opened it up to more than just the gay sexuality, but include all groups, but focusing continually on mystery, thriller, and suspense.
Yeah, if you want to go a little bit further, describe for our listeners what the group is.
What we mainly focus on is the three subgenres, as I mentioned. The reason I started the group long ago is as a writer in having my first book out, I didn't find many groups, particularly on Facebook, which is where most of my marketing and or social activity at the time was, and just felt there wasn't enough geared toward the genre I love so much. I almost exclusively read mysteries and thriller and suspense novels, both traditional, mainstream, and gay as well. I have since discovered some pretty awesome lesbian writers and transsexual writers too. So I like the whole genre, the subgenre. I prefer more geared toward the mystery part of it than focusing on romance. And all I was finding in 2013 were a lot of groups focused on more of the, I guess, for lack of a better term, male-male mystery, thriller, suspense, romance with heavy romance. And that just wasn't quite hitting it for me, and wanting to be able to discuss more titles than the ones that I could find on my own. And since starting the group, like you said, there are so many more than I realized existed at the time. A lot of writers out there floundering, also looking for where is a place that we can concentrate on the area that we write for the most part. And here we are.
And it was very helpful for me, as I said. When did you develop your interest in mysteries?
Going back to when I was a child, very much into the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew were the ones that drew me in very early on, even cartoons that would get my attention, such as Johnny Quest, as well as Scooby-Doo, because they had the edge of mystery to them or thriller. And that was just something that drew me in. When you're that young, and of course, that is what's influencing you, you don't have too much exposure to deeper mystery and so forth. So I looked for it. I went looking for the Agatha Christies and Stephen King, Ray Bradbury, you know, was one of my favorites. And of course, unbeknownst or often not liked by my parents, was staying up to watch Alfred Hitchcock. So a lot of influence there. I loved the regular TV shows in the evenings, Mannix, anything that had to do with mystery. I can't even think of his name now, the most popular one in the evening.
Perry Mason.
Absolutely. So all of these really were a draw to me. And at around 10 years old, I began wanting to write my own stories. And because I used to orate them quite often. My grandmother was a lover of fiction. Loved to read, always wanted to be a writer herself, but through having to raise two girls alone at age 15, you know, with the first child and 18 with the second child, still alone, that was very hard back in those days in the 50s. Excuse me, the 40s with my mom. That was very difficult for her. So she gave up her dreams and raised a family. And we used to sit in the evenings when she was ready for bed, discussing stories, just telling stories off the top of her head. And that's how I started.
Well, one thing I don't know if you know about Perry Mason is the earliest Perry Mason novels, he was much more of a hard-boiled, he was still a lawyer, but he acted like a hard-boiled detective, and he had no problem kicking ass.
Completely different from the television series, yes. I read a few of those as well.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Well, eventually in the books, he did transition more into what the series is. But when I first found those and started reading them, I was really surprised.
I would agree with you. That was a surprise to me as well. And I think that's why I gravitated so much to... last name starts with H, and I can't think of his name, that pretty much the pioneer of gay mysteries was pretty
Heron.
Fantastic. Not Heron, before him. So where a lot like Michael Nava and Greg Heron say, in fact, a new company is now currently re-releasing his books, Hansen, Joseph Hansen.
There you go. Yes.
Re-releasing his books both in electronic ebook and excitingly audiobook. So I have actually purchased a lot of the audiobooks to begin going back from the very beginning, listening to those again via audio because I enjoy that. Once I've read the book, I pick up so much more, and it's completely different reading, hearing experience. But it's awesome to do that. It is not uncommon for me to purchase a book that's also available via audio and go back and forth.
Oh, so you're a writer's dream.
I love listening to the ones that are produced by Greg Heron, as well as Gregory Ash, Michael Nava. I really enjoy going back to listen to those when I've read the books, especially like Heron or Nava when I read books years ago. And being able to enjoy them now that they're coming out on audio is just a completely different experience.
Well, kind of touching on this, how do you feel about the state of gay mysteries today?
To me, it feels that they've gained in popularity. And that's one thing that I just felt wasn't as great. In the 90s, I think they hit their peak, just from my experience, with some of the names that I've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. Out with their books during that time and their long series during that time. I think Greg had two particular, different series. Nava, pretty much the one, and others sprinkled throughout. And like the new books that are being re-released for our new generation, Grant Michaels' books that Recurred Tales have been coming out with, working with the executor of the estate to return those to current readers, which is fantastic. And I understand they're moving in that direction to get a lot more of those old series that have disappeared. And so after they began to lose some steam in the 90s and in the early 2000s, I think we had a gap of lack of artists that were being published by the mainstream publishers, the big time publishers, the big five. And then you had the legacy small publishers that were going out of business, like Allison Books. Yeah. Kensington had moved to publishing less of the gay and lesbian genre. And so they began disappearing. And I think a lot of us went back and rereading the old ones that we enjoyed so much because we had them in paperback or hardback, like John Morgan Wilson. That's another one that was just, I thought was an excellent writer. But eventually his contract ran out and there was a new publisher, a small publisher, picked up the first four, but not the latter eight. And, eventually ebooks hit and that just exploded with new readers, particularly of the younger generation, more of the Nexters and the millennials within that time range. And it just exploded to a point, I think, that helped the genre gain some foothold. And I like to think that the gay mystery thriller suspense group helped direct people to a certain place that they could find, particularly those subgenres that they'd like to read.
So you see a positive outlook for the future of the genre?
I do. I really do. I've seen so many more artists become known, get recognized for that. And I've actually seen some move in that direction as perhaps they were in a different direction based on where the market was of the day, whether it be science fiction or more of the romance, the male-male romance side. So we're seeing some strong mysteries that are being written and put out today from people like Josh Landon, Gregory Ash, Marshall Thornton, Mark Manise. These are some people, David Lennon. And all of these have been either awarded Lambda Literary Awards or have been recognized through finalist nods and so forth. R.E. Redman is one of the ones that comes to mind, one that I've read recently. Bradshaw. Is it R.E. Bradshaw?
Yeah. R.E. Bradshaw. We had her on a couple weeks ago.
I listened to the podcast and I thought it was just phenomenal. I think one of the things that caught me that stayed with me for a few days is I felt like she was inside my head listening to me. She was talking about how the characters live in her head and she lives with them day in and day out. And she just has to get them down and, out of her head so that she can share this with people. And I have always felt that way. They've lived in my head for years before they ever made it to paper, as it were.
Well, you know, you talked a lot of, about some of the old writers, and I think Michael Kraft was on the show, and he pointed out that gay novels in general were becoming more popular with the big publishers towards the late 70s into the early 80s. And unfortunately, that seemed to just suddenly stop with the AIDS crisis.
I was about to suggest that. I think just from my own, you know, non-scientific view of growing up during that time frame, which was so horrible for many of us that were growing up through that period and losing so many friends on a daily basis and a regular basis, it really hit the arts significantly. And we lost a lot of very good writers early on in their careers. Michael Kraft, particularly his series with Stan Krychek, I can't remember the
Krychek
or whatever, was lighter on the mystery, sort of reminding me a little bit of The Murder, She Wrote, but with a gay protagonist. And those were light and airy and fun at a time that was so tough to live through. So books became an escape. I think a lot of the books during that time frame that were gaining popularity were set in large, big locations, you know, like Hollywood or with the Los Angeles set with the celebrities and popular people. And when they started moving out into other areas like Chicago and Greg Heron and New Orleans, that's where they really grabbed my attention. And Michael Nava, when he went into other places like West Hollywood and really showed what it was like during that time frame. And a lot of those books are available again today. Readers can go back and basically look, read them as almost historical to understand the times.
Now, you touched on quite a few writers, but specifically, who are some LGBT mystery writers that inspired you?
Michael Nava, definitely. Greg Heron, and I was inspired as well by John Morgan Wilson. Those were probably the biggest at the time. When I was really focusing in on mystery, there were other people, more mainstream publishing, that have since become more known to the gay and lesbian group, such as Patricia. I can't think of her name. She's one of the biggest thriller writers right now. Not Scotterline. It'll come to me in a minute. She's the profiler, or not profiler, but she works with Bones. The Bone Graveyard, Cornwell. Couldn't think of her name, Patricia Cornwell. These, and of course, much later in her career, Patricia Now Warren came out, and although as a lesbian and all those, most of her books follow more of a traditional gay, quasi-romantic genre, some of her books are very thrilling and can be more of that suspense thriller, certainly like The Front Runner, in my opinion, and can easily cross the genre.
Well, when is it you became inspired to write mysteries of your own?
Well, I can say that I've always been writing them. So it's more like, when did I become inspired to at least let someone else read what I wrote? A lot of that had to do with, I had fully planned to be a writer in my early career. Once I finished high school, straight into college, I skipped grade, so I was only 17 in college and couldn't run around with all of the 18-year-old folks and go to bars. So I spent my time writing. Fully anticipated doing this, I wanted to be a journalist, so I went through college with a journalism minor and majored in English, and life got in the way. Between my father was killed in a boating accident when I was my last year in college, 22, and it disrupted everything in life, from family to that whole period where the immediate family just sort of curls into themselves and protect everyone that's around. My mom, my sister, we were suddenly alone. And that was a very tough time. You know, straight out of college, went right into just a regular 9-to-5, or at that time, it was mostly waiting tables, tending bar, so working late at nights. Writing took a back seat and continued to take a back seat for a long time, when on the side, I would work with freelance, writing some short stories, articles, features for just local magazines or local newspapers. So I always kept my foot into the writing genre, but I needed to put food on the table. So I continued in the corporate realm, found myself in travel. And for the last almost 20 years of my career within the corporate travel side, was working, and I'm retired from American Express. Did not feel that the time was right until I actually retired from American Express to begin reaching out, sending what I've written. I also spent all that time reading a lot, researching, and just getting better.
Well, considering your extensive knowledge of gay mystery and the history of gay mysteries, first I want to tell you that you clearly were the right person to create a Facebook group dedicated to gay mysteries. But I want to ask you, what's your favorite underappreciated novel?
Oh, wow. It would be actually be a horror novel. And my favorite underappreciated horror novel is Steam by J.B. Laws. J.B. Laws lost his battle with AIDS years ago in the 90s. He had entered a contest, a writing contest, first novel writing contest that was sponsored by Lambda Literary, as well as I think it was a different light bookstore. I may be wrong about that, but I think it was a California bookstore.
Yeah, I think it was in San Francisco. I'm not sure the name.
So you're correct. And sponsored also by a publisher that would publish the winning entry, and that was Steam by J.B. Laws. It is the most horrific horror novel that features gay protagonists and characters that I had ever read to the date. And I read it upon original release in 1991 while I was on the road traveling in my wonderful corporate job, and got a hold of that book and started reading in the evenings. And you wanted to hide it away. You wanted to keep it separate from where you were. It was that scary to me at the time. I would say that's the most underappreciated book, an author that we lost far before his time. He was so talented.
Yeah, I think it's almost a running joke on the show, because every week I'm like, oh, I need to add this one to my list. And that's really true. But considering that it's not a mystery novel, but another genre, it's probably one I definitely should look into, because I do need to expand my horizons a little bit.
It is not mystery, but it has mystery in it.
Your first mystery novel was Pretty Boy Dead. Is that correct?
That was my first published full-length novel, yes.
Okay. And that was the first Kendall Parker mystery?
Correct.
So tell us about Kendall Parker and his story.
Ironically, the character lived in my head for 20-plus years. I always knew that I wanted this character that I had been building, carrying with me for so long, at some point when I was ready to get it down on paper. I would say I began writing this 10 times, easy, over a period of 10 years, just trying to get the character right and fleshing him out in the right circumstances that I felt was appropriate. And I wanted someone that came up with not all the bells and whistles provided to him, certainly not a silver spoon, considered a throwaway in a difficult single mother family situation. I wanted someone broken, without a direction, and a loss for what to do with his life early on, but largely what was causing him to fail at everything that he tried was because he would not accept being gay. He had gone through such a hard time in his life. His mom was an alcoholic. He was raised having to take care of himself. Yet he's a big guy. He's 6'4", 230 pounds. So it did not fit what he had always been shown, you know, via media, was told, et cetera. He didn't fit the stereotypical male, gay male. So that's who I wanted to write. I wanted someone damaged who would go into it to try and learn and understand and eventually accept. So when the first book starts out, not only is he in the closet as a homicide detective with the Atlanta Police Department, a 10-year veteran, he's a sergeant. He's had a great career, a very storied career within the department, and one of the most successful homicide detectives in closing cases within the department. And he catches a case of a gay man murdered in Piedmont Park, Atlanta, which is one of the most famous parks within our city. Has a history back in the 80s and 90s and even today of the tree trails and the park itself after dark and the men that would go in seeking affection or just an opportunity to be with others like themselves. So he catches this case and grows increasingly frustrated that the police department, his superiors, do not give it the attention that he feels it should be given. And it becomes very personal to him.
You know, I think all of us have been broken in either small or big ways. And I think that's why broken characters tend to be very popular.
I agree with you there very much. I think we identify quite often, particularly as a gay person, a character that has experienced such a difficult life, and then to watch them grow, fail, accept, and ultimately on the other side, come out better in their growth process, feeling better about themselves. That's just a story I wanted to tell.
Well, on a side note, when I was younger and lived on the East Coast, I spent quite a bit of time in Atlanta and was familiar with Piedmont Park. Unfortunately, I wasn't familiar with it in the way that you mentioned. I guess I missed out.
I would say to you that was sort of a local thing to know. I will admit back, and I think it was the 90s. You remember before internet really became a thing?
Yeah.
Those of us of that age knew and were aware of the BBSs, the bulletin boards that existed online, as a way to touch base with people or dial up with a, you know, little modem that made all those noises before you connected. And it became quite popular nationally at that point, and even internationally, that the quasi tree trails were a place that you could go and meet people and very quickly enjoy yourself. So as you can imagine, the Atlanta Police Department began busting folks for solicitation or et cetera. You know, it became a big thing in the 90s.
Yeah, they learned to read those boards.
What's amazing to me is when you think of, okay, let's jump 20 years later. Here we are in 2019, almost 2020, and you still find and see the stories in local media of people getting busted in the park for just that very reason. When you realize it's so much more open today in acceptance, particularly in very large cities like Atlanta. Atlanta has been considered for quite some time as the gay mecca in the Southeast, along with Miami. But at the same time, you still have a certain segment that are just like we were at the time that we came out, experiencing, not wanting to accept yet, or for whatever reason, feeling the need to hide and be secretive. And they still seek those places.
I think there will always be that segment, you know, despite the internet pick somebody up in 5 minutes on the internet and we have Grindr and Growler, there's always going to be a segment that just really enjoys that whole park atmosphere as well as like the bathhouse atmosphere.
Absolutely. It's the thrill too, you know, it's
exactly.
The thrill and the frightening aspect of it.
Well, in December, you'll release the second Kendall Parker mystery, The Deadwood Murders. Can you give us some details?
And I am extremely excited for this book finally to be available. I've got to thank my loyalist fans that read the first book from the very beginning, pushing me, prodding me, always checking in, you know, excited to read the next book. I had teased them along the way with some shorts or an excerpt here and there. And unfortunately, the book has been delayed so long. Frankly, it will be 6 years since the first book released, almost at the same time frame when Wild City Press first released Pretty Boy Dead in late October 2013. And here we are, 2019, 6 years later. And around December 6th, I say around because if the book is available prior to that, I will go ahead and release it. It's currently in the final read, proofing, I guess is what you call it.
Mm-hmm.
So the target date is December 6th. It will be released exclusively through Amazon initially, and then perhaps other places thereafter, as well as in print. And so I had planned initially to have that release earlier this year in February, but unfortunately suffered some life experiences, some life challenges, both with myself, but more so with my husband. from a health standpoint. So that became my priority, and things just kept getting pushed forward. I also had found the need in late 2018 to find another publisher. The third publisher I was with, I needed to move on. And so that's when I finally made the transition to self-publish.
I know you put a lot of research in your Kendall Parker stories. We had talked about this before. Tell me about that process.
I do. Thank you for asking. Probably at the drudge of my editor and some of my beta readers, but I do a tremendous amount of research. And I think it's because, one, I love research. I'm one of the rare people who write fiction that enjoy the research as much as writing the story. And it's just something I've always enjoyed. I love history. I love looking back and researching. As I said, I wanted to be a journalist at one point, which required quite a lot of research to begin to then formulate a story that you wanted to tell or frame it in a way that required your knowledge.
Well, just so our listeners know, I know one of the folks that helped you with some of your research was a former Atlanta police officer.
And thanks for bringing that up. I actually wanted to mention that. One of the ways that I felt I could get most realistic in sharing what really happens, particularly because I've had people come back to me who have read the first book or have beta read the second book, saying that that's not, you know, these are different times now. You know, it sounds like you're talking about something that happened in the 90s when you talk about all of the bigotry and prejudices that go on within the department. And they're shocked to realize and understand that is really true continually to this day. We're Southern. Even though we're a very large city, there are a lot of prejudices and bigotry that cut very deep in the South. And particularly within the police department, the first responder department, the quasi-traditional macho career fields. So I wanted to be as realistic as possible. I knew no one that was within that industry. I did become a friend of a writer that was a retired LA cop who had 30 plus years through a writing group more than probably 10, 15 years ago, about 15 years ago. We actually published with the same publisher at the time. I got a lot of information on the first book from David Sullivan is his name. He was a retired police patrolman, 30 plus years with LA and various other agencies. But for the second book, I wanted to get closer to home and be realistic with the Atlanta Police Department. So I reached out to the media relations folks at the Atlanta Police Department with an idea. I have the story I want to write. It does feature prominently the Atlanta Police Department within it. It's fiction, but I want it to be realistic as possible. Are you open to me speaking and getting insight of the department from your gay and lesbian media liaison? And that's how I met the gentleman that has helped me quite a bit. He's now retired, was not at the time. His name is Brian King Sharp. It used to be Brian Sharp, but he married his husband, also a former Atlanta Police Department patrolman, retired as well. And they met while they were both cops, but not necessarily on the job.
And I don't know if you know this, we are going to have Brian on as a guest to talk about his history in the police department, as well as helping writers with their research coming up, I think, in about a month or so.
That is superb. No, I did not know that, but I think excellent choice. Brian was terrific to work with, both with scenarios, providing him with chapters of my novel as I was writing to help keep what I was assuming from a fictional standpoint and whatever research I did the most realistic as possible. I wanted to give the reader the realistic view of what could happen through bigotry and prejudices that existed. And to meet Brian, as well as his husband now, to meet both of them and become friends with them. We've become personal friends at this point.
Well, now is the time in our show that I know you know is coming, where I ask the awkward questions writers get. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to spin the wheel here. Okay. Okay, this question, I think to a reader, it will not seem like an awkward question, but to a writer, it frequently is. And the question for you is, who do you base your characters after?
You know, I've had that question quite a bit from people that read what I've written in the past, even from family members. As they're reading, I give them the opportunity to read the book before publication, and particularly my mother and my aunt, who are big fans and have been for years, even when I was not publishing. And they've asked me the same, you know, are you writing yourself into these stories or who you wish you were, or, you know, some, you know, lack of a better term, just a glowing or hero that you want to be. And I can't say it's of me at all, no, but my life experiences are definitely within my characters. I am of a certain age. We've been through a lot, you and I. We're very similar in age, very close. And so I use a lot of those personal experiences that I put within the characters and what they're having to face and go through. But no, Kendall Parker particularly is not me. He's not an anti-hero of myself and who I ever wanted to be. But I've always admired first responders, particularly policemen, FBI, also in health, you know, the EMSs, you know, emergency. I've just always admired them for being able to literally cut off their personal lives when they go to work and always 100%, 110% being there for the person that's in trouble.
Now, when the Deadwood Murders is released, what's going to be the best way for the readers to find the novel?
Definitely via Amazon. In the gay mystery genre as notated, and they can find out information from my website as well, which I believe you'll make available, but it's justmyname.com, so johnmichaelson.com. If you accidentally hit .net, it'll go there as well. You'll see any sale links there or perhaps even a pre-order link. I'll make sure it's available there. They can certainly go to my group on Facebook, which is, you can search for it, the Gay Mystery - Thriller - Suspense Facebook group. And while I've mentioned that, I do want to mention, as we were talking earlier, and the success and popularity of that group growing from just, you know, a few 10, 20 people to now, like within one or two, it's hitting 900. So much happened within the group and its popularity, I couldn't keep up. I found that I just couldn't get back to folks quickly enough because I think people were hungry for a place to find recommendations for books they liked and share their excitement of reading the same book, et cetera. So along the way, one of the members I met from very early on was Matthew Moore, now Matthew Lubbers Moore, because he got married. Congratulations, Matt. And he had been a constant from day one. A person I know that is very involved within the genre and actually will be coming out with a nonfiction book next year. I'm real excited to see where he documents it's a bibliography. Do I say that right? Bibliography or bibliography?
It's a tough one, but yeah, you got it.
Of the gay mystery suspense thriller genre.
Well, and what I want to say about the group is, anybody can go on Facebook and do a search for the group. Also, on our webpage for gaymysteryauthors.com, any of the links to Facebook will take you to that group. So that's another way they can find your group as well. I highly recommend this group. It's great because it's not just for readers and it's not just for authors. Authors and readers intermingle. They talk about books that they've read and recommend, and it's a very active, exciting group. So,
and that's good too, because I set out to be an active group, also a very good mix. I didn't want the group to be overwhelmed with writers that were basically just marketing their wares. Didn't want it to be spammy. And so early on, limited to just promoting one's written material, published material on a weekly basis. And then, like I said, Matt was always with me from the get-go. And so a few years ago, made Matt an administrator. But last year, Matt has been proven to be so supportive of the group and his own contributions that he's now an administrator with the group. So we can keep up with the momentum of the group and continue to grow.
And to add on to what you said, if anybody's familiar with Facebook groups where it's just one book ad after another, just spam, 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 that is not this group at all. So I want to emphasize that because that is one thing I really enjoy about the group.
Thank you for saying that, because it is difficult to keep very stringent with those rules. It's caused a lot of challenges, I would say, over the years. But at the same time, Matt and I believe that that's why the group grew. Is we don't lose very many people at all. I mean, it's below 10 on any given year. Very few people we lose. And I really believe it's because we cut down on spam. It's a place everywhere can find out the new books that are going to be released, even before they show up as a pre-order on Amazon or various other places. We get a lot of cover reveals. And on a weekly basis, which I believe you're aware of, is we try to feature an excerpt, an exclusive excerpt of a new book coming forward, or one that has been published but perhaps is languishing without attention and needs a little bit more attention.
Well, again, our guest today has been John Michelson, author of Pretty Boy Dead, and also the upcoming second Kendall Parker mystery, The Deadwood Murders. And can find the upcoming novel on Amazon and join the group, and you can see the announcement when it's absolutely released. So thank you for being a guest on today, John.
Well, thank you. I can't thank you enough. This has been very pleasurable. And I need to say as well that I was so thrilled to learn that you were going to begin these podcasts. I think just as an extension of more popularity and exposure to the gay mystery, thriller, and suspense genre, including the subgenres of the lesbian and bisexual and transsexual and just queer identity, it's fantastic. Excuse me, there are so few places that are available where people can go as a one-stop shop and just get so many recommendations and get to hear from the authors themselves and learn and feel more of a connection, so that you're more willing to reach out on Facebook to a writer that you've admired, someone that you want to discover. I think the group has really been a stepping board for readers who, for the most part, stay quite quiet within the group, but they open up and begin to start asking questions and talk to the writers when they join in. And I think that's just a wonderful success and something I greatly enjoy.
Well, it's a fun group to interact, but if you're a lurker and just want to find out what books are out there, it's a great group for that as well. So
I would say the overall membership is overwhelmingly lurker.
I believe I am in most groups except yours. So thank you again, John.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, the pleasure is mine.